Recently, I had the privilege and the honor of being invited to a wonderful brand new conservation space and idea, and it's a wildlife volunteer fund at a place called Tula Tula, which I'd heard about many times, had been on my bucket list forever, and this was the opportunity to go and check it out as the Tula Tula Volunteer Academy opened. And at the opening, I met a woman who I would like to say has changed not just my life, but the life of anyone who meets her. And now she is a bestseller. Her book went from basically being launched to number one. And I am very stoked to have her on the couch with me today, Françoise Malby-Anthony. Bonjour.
Bonjour, Carrie.
I am so excited to have you here with me. This is when they said to me that there was a possibility that you may, in your schedule, now you're touring, be able to fit us in, I was beyond excited. So thank you so much for joining us on East Coast Breakfast.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
So I'm sitting with a copy of An Elephant in My Kitchen in front of me right now. It's a sequel to the international bestseller, The Elephant Whisperer, who was your husband, your late husband, What the Herd Taught Me About Love, Courage, and Survival. So before we even get to the book, Françoise, let's just find out about the woman behind this book. Where were you born? How did you land up in South Africa?
Well, I was born a few years ago.
Just, you know.
And I lived in France. I'm from the south of France originally. And did my studies in the south of France, in Montpellier. And then I went to live in Paris to work. And one day I was traveling to the UK for business. And I was waiting for a taxi at my hotel. And that's how I met my future husband, Lawrence Anthony.
Okay, so now you're waiting for a taxi. Where is Lawrence in the equation? Because, I mean, where did the meetup come? Was he the taxi driver?
He was queuing. I was first in the queue. He was last in the queue. It was a very cold morning. It was minus 17 in London that day. You couldn't find any taxi. Big snow and everything. And the porter came to ask me if I wouldn't mind to share my taxi with a guy at the end of the queue.
No.
Because we are going to the same place. And I was in a bad mood. It was cold. I was late. And I looked at this guy and I looked at him and I said, no.
No.
So as I say that, Lawrence, that's the first time he got a taste of French attitude.
So, but you obviously landed up sharing the taxi.
We ended up sharing a taxi, and 10 months later, I moved to South Africa.
So now Lawrence Anthony, he's known as the Elephant Whisperer. He was already in South Africa. You guys meet, you fall in love. You moved to South Africa from France. It's a very different lifestyle, but you didn't just move to South Africa. You moved basically into the wildlife, like into the wild.
Yeah, well, at first, that was 31 years ago when I met Lawrence in 1987. We first moved to Durban. We lived in Durban for 10 years. And 10 years later, Lawrence just announced to me that we were going to live in the middle of the bush in Zululand, in a game reserve for a big, with a vision of a big conservation project with local communities. And as I always say, I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. But I thought, yeah, why not? Let's do it. So that was 20 years ago.
So there wasn't any resistance from you? Was there no like, what are you, how can't, I can't, were you just on board?
I didn't even ask questions. I just went. And that's how I landed. So that was the culture shock was quite big. I'm a big city girl. And landing in the middle of the bush, it was like coming on another planet for me.
But now, so Lawrence has said to you, now we're moving into the bush, and you said go with it. Let's talk a little bit about your late husband. What was your relationship like, the two of you together? What was the energy like?
You know, Lawrence was a visionary. He nothing could stop him. Whatever he decided, he did it. He was like that. He was an amazing human being. And what happened is that we never really worked together before the first 10 years in Durban. But when we started Tula Tula, we realized that we were very complementary. And he dealt with the animals. I dealt with the hospitality, the business side of Tula Tula. And it was a perfect combination. It worked out absolutely perfectly. So he dealt with all the conservation project and so on. This is why when he passed away, it was very hard for me. And because I didn't know much about conservation, actually. I knew very, very little. So that was 6.5 years ago.
If you don't mind me asking, and you don't have to answer this, how did Lawrence pass away?
He had a heart attack.
Was he sick at all before?
Yes. Yes, he had a heart attack 6 months previously. Yeah. And he had another one. He had one, his first one was in 2006. And then he had one in August, September 2011. And then the fatal one was in March 2012.
And were you on the game reserve when it happened?
No, I was in Durban. I got a phone call. And, you know, the dreaded phone call at 6 o'clock in the morning, which announces something. It was totally unexpected. I mean, he was doing fine. And he was in Johannesburg. And, voila. So it was a shock. It was a shock. You know, the news fell onto all of us at Tula Tula. It was like a bomb had dropped. And you could feel the atmosphere was completely numb at Tula Tula. It was just such a shock. I couldn't believe it. You know, when this kind of thing happens, you think, no, it's not possible, you know.
It must be a dream.
Must be a dream, yeah.
And especially because you're working with wildlife, you can't tell the elephants to just chill, go away, stop for a moment.
No.
We're going through something tragic.
Yeah.
Life must continue, must go on, and even more so when animals are involved. How did that happen? Was there someone that had been working closely enough with him? I mean, he was the elephant whisperer. He still is the elephant whisperer. Was there anyone working close enough with him to try and step in there to help you?
Oh, yeah. No, all my staff, all my game rangers were absolutely wonderful. All my, you know, we're like a big family at Tula Tula. So all my game rangers, all my staff, they all stood, we all stood together. I mean, it was like a shock for every single one of us.
And I don't even know how to ask this, but did the elephants feel it? Could you notice that the elephants were also in mourning?
Absolutely. Absolutely, because what is extraordinary is that the elephants hadn't come to the house where we live with Lawrence for quite a few months. And 2 days after I passed away, the whole herd of elephants arrived, procession. At my house, and like waiting. And that was 5 o'clock in the afternoon on the 4th of March, and they were all there standing. But what is, and you know what, we can all communicate with animals. I mean, everybody can communicate with animals or to a certain point. But what above all is important is that we can all interpret the behavior of animals the way we feel like it, the way we want. And the way we all interpreted it is that they all came because they felt something happened, something really serious happened, because you could feel the mood of everyone was so down, so like everything had stopped at Tula Tula. But what is even more extraordinary, so the elephant stayed for a few hours just waiting, and exactly 1 year later, exactly the same day, the 4th of March at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, the elephants came back in exactly the same kind of procession. And what is even more extraordinary is the following year, exactly the same day, the 4th of March at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, the herd came back again. Exactly the same way. All waiting. You know, people can say whatever they want, but I mean, this is just not a coincidence. This is extraordinary.
This is extraordinary. Mm. Sure, okay, so...
So I think that the emotional impact of Lawrence passing away affected not only the humans, but his very special herd of elephants. And...
It is incredible.
Very moving. Very moving story.
It doesn't even feel real. So obviously this has happened and we've realized that life has to go on. And considering you told me that Lawrence was the conservation man and you were the woman behind the scenes, I'm now sitting with a book and elephant in my kitchen in front of me. So how long before you realized that you were going to have to step in and become a mama to the herd as well?
A mama to the herd. Well, I had to be a mama to a lot of things. Well, Lois passed away, the future was very uncertain because, as I say, I didn't have much clue about conservation, about the work he was doing with the communities. I was dealing mainly with the rest of the business side, the hospitality and the admin, finance and so on. So I had to step in. I had no choice. I had to learn. And I had to rely on my game rangers, my game reserve manager, and all these people who knew much more than me. So what I did, I just learned. And the thing, I was faced with situations. I had to take decisions. Like 2 weeks after Lawrence passed away, Thabo, he was still a baby rhino.
Thabo the rhino. Thabo. I met Thabo the rhino.
Yeah, the one you kissed, yeah.
The one who's I kissed Thabo the rhino. Finally, a man loves me.
He's good looking.
Yeah,
huh?
He is very good looking.
He's young. He's 10 years old.
Okay, well, that's a bit awkward now.
I don't know how much it is in human years, but he's 10 years old.
He's 10. Just...
And he's very good looking. He got good choice. So my little Thabo in 2012 was only 3 years old. And he was shot by poachers. Shot at by poachers who, thanks God, missed. And just shot him in the leg. But it was very traumatizing. So, you know, poachers... rhino wounded. I mean, all this. That was only 2 weeks after Lawrence passed away.
Oh my God.
So, you know, all this just created a bit of panic in my life. I just realized that now the security of the rhinos were
on you
and my hands, and that the security of every single living, breathing creatures at Tula Tula was as well, whether it's wildlife or humans.
At any point at this time, Francois, sorry to interrupt you, but at any point did you consider just selling it and giving up?
Never, never. It would have been like leaving your family, leaving your children behind. Okay. It was impossible. Lawrence and I, we created that place in 1998. We bought that place and we created like creating a family. Mm. And all the staff was relying on me. And the animals as well, of course. We had to look after them. That was, you know, it, as I said, you have to create something like a very good cause like this, which helps you. It's such a good purpose and such a good cause that...
like a passion that drives you.
It's a passion that drives you, yeah. And that helps you to go through tough times.
Because at the end of the day... Lawrence's passing was 100% not in vain. I mean, we could even say that because of what happened, you now have a best-selling book. Because had he not passed away so tragically, maybe you would not have taken on the conservation side at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would have never got involved. Or a little bit. I was a little bit involved with Thabo when I went to fetch him. I love the conservation side.
Yeah.
I mean, now I just... I love it so much that that's actually all I'm doing.
So what is a day like for Françoise at Tula Tula?
It's never a dull moment. It's never the same. There's always something happening. That's the life. You know, like we've got a beautiful rescue and rehabilitation center. And sometimes so you got one new... often arriving, so it creates a lot of interest and a lot of worries as well, because sometimes they don't arrive in very good condition. Then we've got, there's always something happening with a poaching incident. That's not the funny part of...
How often do you deal with poaching incidences?
Well, we had a terrible one when I was in the UK doing the tour. I woke up on a Sunday morning with pictures of a dead poacher and picture of wounded poachers and poachers arrested. I mean, it was a big... The whole night, our anti-poaching team fought with... There were about 8 of them.
Sure.
8 poachers, 6 got arrested. One was killed and one is badly wounded.
And is this recent?
This is recent. This was 3 weeks ago. Mm. So we've had serious poaching incidents. Unfortunately... We don't want to use violence, but violence is necessary. We have to, we have to react. We have to, and you know, it's self-defense, of course. But you know, I've been asking, ask often the question, how do you fight against poaching? Okay, there is our anti-poaching team security. We've got cameras all around the place. We've got really well equipped. But the other way, it's education.
Yeah.
Education. This is why the Tula Tula Volunteers Academy steps in. You know, we try to educate and inspire not only volunteers from all around the world, but as well local communities.
Yeah.
I've got my guys, they go to the school, local schools, and we take one volunteer for free from the local communities to teach them about conservation,
wow.
to show him so that he can go and spread the word outside in the local communities, to explain all the conservation efforts that we are doing to preserve wildlife, because in 20 years' time, there's no more wildlife. It carries on like this.
It does.
You think that in Africa, one elephant is killed every 15 minutes, that three rhinos are killed every day in South Africa. It means, if you work it out, consider the number of elephants or rhinos left, 20 years, it's nothing, it's tomorrow. And the children of today will never see a rhino or an elephant.
If, Francoise, if someone's listening right now and they would love to help out, or perhaps come and, because I know that you can come and spend a night in your beautiful tented camp, or you can come and stay for a week, a month. How does one find out about the Volunteer Academy?
You just check on our website, tulatula.com, and you look at our conservation project. And the Volunteers Camp is part of our Volunteers project. It's part of our non-profit organization, which is the South African Conservation Fund, which means that all the funds that the volunteers pay go back into our conservation project.
All the funds?
Every cent. Which means that it goes back into our anti-poaching, our rehab center, or for the expansion of Tula Tula.
So, Francoise, I know that you are literally in the middle of a book tour, so I'm not going to keep you much longer, but I want to just talk about this book for a second.
Yes.
An Elephant in My Kitchen. I have to ask, have you ever legitimately had an elephant in your kitchen?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I was like, that's a very cool title. I wonder if it comes from real life.
Of course we did. It's a beautiful story, actually. And I called it like that because I really had an elephant in my kitchen. It was a 1 week old baby elephant which got lost in the game reserve. He got lost and he landed in my garden.
Oh.
And it's my chef called Tom, actually.
Yeah.
Who came to knock at my window at 8 o'clock at night. For us, there is an elephant, a baby elephant in the garden. So that baby elephant, we ran after her. And the both of us, my chef and myself, and we pushed her into my kitchen. And after that, we looked at each other and said, and now, what do we do? And after that, the story is in the book. The beautiful story is that she got reunited at 1 o'clock in the morning. The ranger looked for the mother. I mean, we fed her. And the ranger looked for her mother. But you know what's really strange? That, you know, knowing the elephants, the family structure of the elephants and their communication skills, how come they were not looking for their baby? This is what we found very strange. I mean, I'm sure even a mother, she loses her baby, she looks for it, you know. They were not even looking. They were quite far away in the game reserve. So at 1 o'clock in the morning, we put her in the little backy, in the back of the backy with all the rangers and Tom, my chef. And they brought her back to the mother, which was a little bit of a cowboy mission that you can read in the book.
Wow.
But it was extraordinary. And why she was called Tom, because my chef is called Tom.
I was, okay, because yeah. I heard it.
We give the name of all our elephants and rhinos, even hippos, they all got names. And we give a name according to the story of the baby. We even got an elephant family tree. And each of our elephants have got his ID card as well, with their own personality and character. Yeah, they're humans.
And
I think they're humans.
I mean, it feels like your book was released and within 40 seconds it was number one. Did you expect that? I mean,
not at all. Never. And I know it was it's beautifully written by Katja Willemsen, who's from Durban, actually. She lives in France now. It's beautifully written with beautiful photo from Kim MacLeod. And I knew it was a good book, but you know, you never know in advance. But I couldn't believe it. The number of copies which have been sold so far. But even in the UK, it was extremely well received.
Well, I am very proud to know you. I'm very excited. I'm going to be name dropping you for the rest of my life. Thank you for taking the time out to speak to us. And I only wish you the greatest, best of luck and sending you so much love and light for the rest of your journey with your animals. And I hope that they all remain really safe, as do you. And I hope that you get a lot more volunteers to come through, because Tula Tula is one of the most exquisite places I've ever been to. And just the energy there is really something else. It's something special. And you can see that Lawrence is definitely still very present there with all of you. So thank you so much for coming and joining me on the couch today, Francoise.
Thank you so much, Kerry.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup.